ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This is text 34. Sukadeva Goswami continues, when all the demigods requested the great Vishwarupa to be their priest, Vishwarupa, who was advanced in austerities, was very pleased. He replied to them as follows. Today's verse, Sri Vishwarupa Uvacha Vikarhitam Dharmashilair Brahma Bharcha Upavyayam Katam Nu Mavidhonata Loke Shair Abhiyachitam Pratyakya Syati Tachchishya Sareva Svartaruchate Chitam Pratyakya Yasti Tachishya Sureva Sarda Ruchate Sri Vishnu Purvacha Vigaritam Dhanmashilaye Brahma Varcha Upavyayam Katam nu mat vidho natha Loke shair abhiya chitam Pratyakya syashati tachishya Sareva swadarucha Mothers Sri Vishwarupa vacha Vigaritam dharmashilaye Brahma Varucharipavyam Katham nu mavidho natha Loke shair abhiyachitam Pratyakyas yatita chishya Sareva swarta ruchate Sri Vishwarupa Vacha Vigaritam Dharmashilaye Brahma Varshadabhavyam Katam Nama Vidonatha Lokesh Erahiyachitam Pratyakyasati Tachishya Sri Vishwarupa Uvacha. Sri Vishwarupa said, Vigarhitam, condemned, Dharmashilai, by persons respectful to the religious principles, Brahmavarcha, of brahminical strength or power, Upavyayam, causes loss, katam, how, nu, indeed, matvidha, a person like me, natha, O lords, loka ishai, by the ruling powers of different planets, abhiyachitam, request, pratyakyasyati, will refuse Tat Shishya, who is on the level of their disciple, Saha, that, Eva, indeed, Swa-artha, real interest, Uchate, is described as. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sri Vishwarupa said, O demigods, although the acceptance of priesthood is decried as causing a loss of previously acquired brahminical power, how can someone like me refuse to accept your personal request? You are all exalted commanders of the entire universe. I am your disciple and must take many lessons from you. Therefore, I cannot refuse you. I must agree for my own benefit. Purport. The professions of a qualified brahmana are patan, patan, yajana, yajana, dana, and patikraha. The words yajana and yajana mean that a brahmana becomes a priest of the populace for the sake of their elevation. One who accepts the post of spiritual master neutralizes the sinful reactions of the yajaman, the one on whose behalf he performs yajna. Thus, the results of the pious acts previously performed by the priest or spiritual master are diminished. Therefore, priesthood is not accepted by learned brahmanas. Nevertheless, the greatly learned brahmana Vishwarupa became the priest of the demigods because of his profound respect for them. Srila Prabhupada Ki. So, Indra, being intoxicated by wealth, committed the offense of thinking the spiritual master an ordinary living entity. And that's the only reason you become neglectful of the spiritual master, is because you think him to be ordinary. So he commits that offense. As a result of that offense, he, along with everyone under his protection, loses the Swargaloka. They lose all their opulence, which was the cause of their intoxication, particularly Indra's. And then they went to Lord Brahma seeking shelter. Lord Brahma advises him to take shelter of Vishwarupa with the understanding that he will also be inclined towards the demons, because his mother was a demon, an asura. So as long as you could tolerate that, then you should go and seek shelter from Vishwarupa. So they go to Vishwarupa and they request him to be their priest. And now Vishwarupa is responding to their request. Here he's explaining to them that their request has placed him into a dharma sankat. Understand? Sankat. Sankat means a dilemma, basically. And so their request has placed him, Vishwarupa, into a dharma sankat, a dilemma of what is the proper principle of dharma to be followed. Understand? This happens in the progress of religious life or spiritual life. You always get stuck in this dharma sankat periodically through your progress. If I follow this particular principle, I'll be condemned in this way. If I follow that particular religious principle, I'll be condemned in that way. This is called dharma sankat. Understand? You follow one thing, you become finished. You follow another thing, which is also dharma, you become finished that way. It's called dharma sankat. So which one to accept? You understand? You understand? A good example, Arjuna is placing his dharma sankat in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Many are there. One thing he mentions is that on the other side of the battlefield are respectful elders, like Bhishma and Drona, who are my gurus. So even if the guru acts harshly toward you, you should not act harshly toward him in any circumstance. Understand? So that's one religious principle is there. Now he's on the battlefield and he's being requested to kill them. So there's a dharma sankat. Understand? What is the dilemma? Michael, what is the dilemma? What did I just say? See? I didn't speak anything complicated. Anything complicated I said? Nothing, anything complicated I said? Michael, where? What did I mention? What is dharma sankat? The dilemma of religious principles. Can you say? Yes, and what is the problem there? You accept one dharma, rejecting. Give the microphone. They contradict. Okay, what's another problem also? I mentioned only, I just told. What is the problem? Who wants to say? Hold, okay, get the microphone. Think of the answer.
Is it said that a brahmana can't take the priestly class?
We didn't get to that part yet. Oh. Yes. This is a class. That was a verse. We're just mentioning that Vishwarupa is explaining that the request of the demigods has placed him into a dharma sankat. Dharma sankat means there's a contradiction of religious principles. Both of them are dharma, but they're contradicting each other. And it places he who has to follow into a complexity or perplexing situation. If I accept this principle, I'll become condemned in this way. If I accept that principle, I become condemned in another way. Understand? This is the dilemma. And so when you get in the Dharma Sankhat, you become bewildered. And when one is bewildered, he cannot perform activity, right? You understand? So Arjuna, when he gets into this dilemma in the first chapter, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he expresses his Dharma Sankhat, and then he finally says, I'm bewildered. I don't know what is to be done. Right, so the result of being caught in a contradiction or an apparent contradiction of religious principles is bewilderment. And when there's bewilderment, you cannot act because you don't know which action to be accepted for the ultimate progress. Understand? You understand? Michael, you understand? Paying attention? Are you paying attention? So, Visvarupa expressed this Dharma Samskat. So what is this Samskat here? He's mentioning for those who are Dharma Shilai means they're the knowers of religious principles. They understand Dharma. Then Vigarhitam, they condemn this accepting priesthood. Why they condemn this accepting priesthood? Brahma Varcha Upavyayam, because it causes the diminishing of Brahma Tejas. Brahma Varcha means spiritual or brahminical power. If they accept the priesthood, so the idea here is that accepting priesthood is usually done by persons who are materialistic and they want to make money. For example, in the modern day, which has come somewhat popular in a lot of parts of the world, is car pujas. You heard of these things, car pujas, where they, in certain temples, they even have spaces marked out for the car pujas. And this, of course, in America, you will never find this because people are not nearly so religious. But you have pious persons who are very foolish. And so they want to employ a brahmana to perform puja of their car. Understand? So there should be some coconut, there should be some fire, and some arti tray. They perform some worship of the car. And they want the car to be blessed for their program of sense gratification. May this car not get in any trouble while I'm driving to my places of sense gratification. Understand? This is when they employ priests for their material affairs. Understand? That's the point. They employ priests for their material affairs. I remember once a man came here. Many men have come here. But once a man came here, asked for a car puja. So I said, I'll perform one for you. Of course, I don't know anything, puja, anything. So I told them, I gave him one mala, japa mala. And I said, you should chant one mala, Hare Krishna on these beads and walk around the car. He was very upset with me. So at the time, our temple wasn't in such a healthy condition. And so he got one of the devotees here, who was kind of doing this priestly thing, to do like an actual car puja. But later on, this person, he wasn't really a devotee. I mean, I don't want to say he wasn't a devotee. It's a little mean, because he's on the altar. But he gangster one person out of $800 for one of these pujas. 800, and then later on, the person called our temple and was very furious that, you know, they were cheated out of $800. I was thinking, you're the only fool who gave it. Anyway, this is going on. So someone accepts a priest for their material affairs. Understand? That's the point. So when you accept priesthood, usually people go to you for material affairs and they will give you material opulences and so on for helping them to bless their material activities. Right, this is the priesthood, as it's being spoken of here traditionally. And so for one who accepts the priesthood for their livelihood, then that causes diminishing of their spiritual power. That's what's being mentioned here. Understand? If you accept the priesthood for making money in order to help people along in their material affairs, then it causes the diminishing of one's spiritual power. Understand? Simple point. Brahma Varcha Upavyayama causes diminishing of Brahma Tejas or spiritual potency. Because that spirituality that depends on the wealth and on followers is a cause for excessive comfort in the material world and then drags down the consciousness of the material platform by association. You understand? Can you understand this point? Just like Rupa Goswami has made this point also. Anya Bilashita Shunyam Gana Karma Dhyanavritam. Yeah, so this bhakti should be devoid of desires, and it should not be covered by jnana, karma, and adi. Adi means etc. So what does this Adi refer to? Anyone knows? Huh? Okay, yoga. What else does it refer to? Wealth, yes. What else does it refer to? Gana karma, Adi. Anyone else? Huh? Yes, that's already mentioned in karma. Gana karma means the pious activities. Anything else? Adi. Yes, yoga, vairagya, gana. And then Acharya has explained the laxity and bhakti that is a result of wealth and followers. You understand? In other words, wealth and followers. And I think the idea here, the feeling of it is that comfort creates laxity in the execution of bhakti. Understand? So this is considered the covering of devotion. The same idea is expressed here, Brahma Vrachupaya. It causes diminishing of spiritual power. Because when there is opulence and the subsequent comfort that arises due to opulence, then there's a diminishing of spiritual power. In other words, you begin to compromise your spiritual principles. I'll give you an example. This happened, I think this happened in our movement. At one place in America only, one temple was being mostly maintained by an Indian congregation. Of course, that sounds like most of our temples, but in one particular temple, so this Indian congregation, they were not exactly devotees. They were Hindus, but Hindus who lived in the vicinity of our temple, so they were maintaining with their donations and so on. So finally, they wanted a request of having other deities put into the temple, like Shiva and Ganesh. Particularly Shiva and Ganesh are very popular. So they wanted other deities to be put into the temple. So then immediately a dilemma comes up. Why? Because they're maintaining the temple in terms of monetary support. So if you don't acquiesce to their desire for material satisfaction, in this case, in the form of providing the deities of Shiva, Ganesh, and so on, then they will withdraw their monetary support. Understand? So then if you feel that you are depending on that monetary support for the continuation of the temple runnings, then you would have to make a compromise. Okay, so we'll make an altar. We won't make the altar on the same level as Krishna, but because they want to see these deities, we'll create an altar for them so they can be satisfied. And that way they'll continue to give monetary support for the continuation of the temple's expenses and so on. So in this way you become compromised in the principles of pure bhakti in this case. Understand? This happened in one of the temples here in Chicago, one of the Vaishnava temples here, very beautiful. You go to their temple, they have deities of Ganesh, Durga, Shiva, and surprisingly, Sai Baba also is there. And one of the temples, Sai Baba of all, Sai Baba is definitely nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. I mean, you can get away with Shiva, Durga, Lakshmi is of course the internal potency, but Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, you can kind of get away with that because that falls within the Vedic canon. But Sai Baba is just like I don't want to make any offense, it might be Jiva Aparad, but he was a person who claimed to be the Supreme Lord, and he was on the particular Sai Baba. There are several Sai Babas that are popular, and this particular one, he was famous for his philanthropic work in India. And so from that, he started saying he was God, and many people accepted him as such. So many people from India, they worship Sai Baba. So this Vaishnava temple only, Ramanujacharya line, they put one altar there of Sai Baba for these people. So many people go there too. So in this way, you compromise the actual principles because of depending on wealth and followers for the sustenance of your spiritual practices. So therefore, Rupa Goswami has said, Gana Karma Adi. Anavritam. Do not allow your bhakti to be covered by dependence on wealth and followers. And of course, this isn't true because for most of the angas of bhakti, you don't require wealth or followers. You don't need wealth or followers to hear and chant. But when it comes to certain angas of bhakti, like maintaining the deity worship, this problem can come up. And of course, this is a problem that I imagine that in the future of our Krishna consciousness movement, we will have to deal with this sort of dilemma. Because as the economy becomes more burdened by the demoniac activities of the government, and we have harder time maintaining the huge overheads of these big institutions, at that time you might find yourself burdened with this sort of dilemma. On the one hand, if I don't compromise, then we might not be able to maintain the worship of the deity. On the other hand, if I do compromise, then my bhakti will be, pause button, how you put it, it will be stopped from that moment on. You will not be able to make much spiritual progress from there for compromising the principles of Shuddha Bhakti. In other words, Brahma Vartra Upavinyam. So then your spiritual power will become diminished. Understand? Everyone understanding? You understand? You understand? Yes? You get it? So this is one side of Vishwarupa's Dharma Sankat. On the one hand, if I accept the priesthood from you, then my own spiritual power will be diminished. And then on that, how I make progress. So the problem is there. That's an important question. Don't think it is in any way selfish. How will I make progress? That is not a selfish idea. That's an important point. Especially for those of us who want to assist the preaching movement, then we have to give consideration to our own development. Otherwise, what preaching you will do? So don't think it anyway inconsequential question about the concern of one's own progress in spiritual life. It is very important. You cannot, if you're drowning, you cannot save others who are drowning. Understand? So this one side of the issue. Then the other side of the issue he is mentioning here. He mentions that Loka Ishai. Loka Ishai means you are the lords of the universe. Understand? You are the lords of the universe and Abhiyachitam. You have made a request of me. And this request I have to consider seriously. Why I have to consider it seriously? It says here, Tashisha. Because I'm on the level of your disciple. I'm on the level of your disciple. You are the lords of the universe, and therefore your request I have to consider seriously, being on the level of your disciple. So he's saying here, Katam nu mavido nata pratyagyasyati. How can I refuse such a request of such persons? If I am on the level of the disciple, you are the level of my guide. If I reject your guidance, then, the last line, sa eva svarta uchite, then how will I be acting for my own self-interest? So, dilemma. On the one hand, if I follow the principles of Dharma, by then I should reject the priesthood because it causes the diminishing of brahminical power, spiritual potency. On the other hand, because I'm on the level of your disciples, if I reject what you say, then that also will compromise my own self-interest. And therefore, how will I make progress? So now he's saying I'm in a dilemma. Ultimately, Prabhupada says here, he will accept the priesthood from them because of his profound respect for their position. Something that Arjuna also argued in the same way, but Krishna rejected his particular stance. So as a final point, we should not take it that this Dharma Sankat is so easy to answer when it comes upon us. Generally, when we hear about it in terms of a third party, it is easy to understand. And when we hear about Krishna and Arjuna, it's clear, Arjuna, you should fight. No problem, isn't it? You easily understand it, isn't it? What is the difficulty, Arjuna? You should fight. It is perfectly clear. But when it is happening to you, you don't have such clarity. Why? You don't have such clarity. Suppose Krishna tells you, you have to kill your superiors. All the ones who nourished you in your development in spiritual life and practical material affairs, even like your parents and so on. Suppose Krishna tells you, you have to kill them in order for your ultimate spiritual development. Then you think you'll be, yes, no problem. You think you'll be like that? So easy you'll come to such conclusion like that? Arjuna's situation is quite, for me, it's quite intense to try to imagine myself in that situation. Right? You think you will have such clarity of thought? Yes, Krishna. Whatever you say, I'm ready to act. You think you have such clarity? You will have such clarity? No, you think you will have such clarity? So don't think that, why is it that when we are seeing it from a third party perspective, it seems to be perfectly clear, but when it's from a first party perspective, we have Dharma Sankat, we have confusion. Why does that happen? What's the answer? Because we're attached to our situation. Understand? When others are there, we're not attached to a situation. So that detachment allows for clarity of perspective. And when you're attached, then that obfuscates. It tends to cloud one's perspective on the situation. So the Dharma Sankat is a very hard dilemma to come out of. One which Vishwarupa is able to do so easily because of his profound respect for the devatas, as mentioned here. Are there any questions, comments, concerns? Yeah, Jatindra Prabhu.
Uh,
I was remembering a similar situation that happened here, like in when we first moved into the temple. The deities were upstairs on the third floor, and the temple needed some money. So the temple president was approached by some Bengalis for Durga Puja. So they had Durga Puja downstairs here on the first floor. And things got out of hand. People were dancing on the windowsills, and they were out in front of the temple smoking and drinking and fighting and swearing. And this was when we first moved into the temple, and so the neighbors are getting a different impression of what was going on here. So we had some serious explaining to do, and they were here for 7 days, and I think they gave the temple $3,000. And it wasn't, you know, it was just like something that we really regretted. So it's just something that came to mind that got really ugly.
Yeah, so that's a good example of this. Yeah.
There's three things I'm considering as I ask this question. The first point is Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami explains in Madhya Lila that as he's writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's not going to be able to please everyone. But the way of devotional service one acquires from his superiors, and that is the methodology that will help him make advancement. So what I've seen in my short time in Krishna consciousness, that the two sankats that devotees often go through is one, in terms of their inspirations, that they may have been raised by a certain devotee, but after a while they don't feel so inspired from him or her, and it's time to switch the source of inspiration, but they get into this sankat. Should I abandon my original source of inspiration? Should I switch? What should I do? I've already committed to one spiritual master. What about, but I don't feel so inspired anymore. Maybe I should, you know, so it's, but they're not initiated yet. So it's a bit of a sankat for the devotees. That's one thing I've noticed. The other thing I've also noticed is sometimes devotees get into this dilemma about what should be their primary service. Should it be Sankirtan? Should it be teaching? Should it be cooking? Should it be this, that? You know, I'm not fully nourished by this. Like that, there's this. So I was wondering if in light of this principle that Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami talks about, if you could maybe speak a little bit about how do we get out of these two kind of common dilemmas that I see devotees get into.
Well, spiritual life should be practical and organic, and in order for it to be organic, you have to do whatever's helping you the most, generally. So sometimes it does take place that in the beginning one finds inspiration in one place, and then by staying longer in Krishna consciousness, developing one's own personality, Krishna conscious personality, so to speak, gaining more wisdom, you may not find the same inspiration in the same place and you find it somewhere else. And in that case, it might be wise to continue the growth of your Krishna consciousness with that new inspiration. Ultimately, because spiritual masters, if we're using the spiritual master principle, the spiritual masters are one. They're equal manifestations of the absolute truth. Nowhere, at least in my study of the various books, is it mentioned of any superiority in terms of these persons. They're always mentioned in the shastras as equal manifestations of the absolute truth. And they are one in that they have one interest. Their one interest is either, you know, from one perspective, to serve Krishna, or the one interest is to see to the elevation of the disciple. And so, therefore, it doesn't really matter in that sense where one is getting the inspiration, because the interest is one. And there is no envy amongst Vaishnavas also. It's not like this is my property as such. If someone is finding inspiration elsewhere, then he should speak about that with that particular devotee. And then, you know, with blessings, continue the growth of his Krishna consciousness from the new inspiration. That you get from Brihadaratamrita, Gopal Kumar is traveling. In one place he is finding guidance and inspiration, but after some time he's feeling dissatisfied and he has to go to another quarter. And this way he is making progress towards Krishna. Now generally, we feel, generally there may be a little discomfort in expressing those sorts of principles amongst neophytes like ourselves, because our sources of inspiration are usually very flimsy. It's due to the fault of Lolium. Lolium means a restless mind, which is a something that can destroy bhakti. So due to greed, this is the material kind, not the spiritual kind. Due to this lolia, this restlessness of mind, then one hears something from one source, oh, that was inspiring, I think that's my guru. Then someone else comes and says something inspiring, oh, that was nice, I think that is my guru. And in this way, one's moving from one quarter to the next, not based on any profound spiritual insight, but based on fickleness of mind. And therefore, we don't generally, in perhaps the public discussions, emphasize this sort of idea that one can shift gears, so to speak, or shift inspirations as such, because you have to do whatever is helping the most in Krishna consciousness. And the reason we might not do so is because the basis for our changing stations is so whimsical. Whimsical is a good word. And so in this way, I often like to tell devotees that they should give themselves enough time to be properly educated in Krishna consciousness. Don't just jump off an inspiration. There's always basically two things we need for a lot of development. You need a lot of inspiration in spiritual life, because the material world is discouraging, and Maya's business is more or less to discourage us. So you need a lot of inspiration for spiritual life to keep up the practices and so on. But you need a lot of education also, so you know exactly what you're doing. And oftentimes, the inspiration is easier to capture because a funny class is there, a charismatic speaker is there, and you can gain inspiration from the discussions. But then when asked, what is it that you've actually learned from the discussions, then one is silent. Right, just like the other day, Michael was like this. He was saying he gets a lot out of one particular classes. Some particular, I said, I get a lot of this class. Then I said, what are you learning? Then he didn't say anything. So what is this? How you will make growth like that? I mean, that is true. When you get inspiration, that is actually required. You need an inspiration for growth. That's a fact. Otherwise, you will not feel inspired to move. You will lose Krishna consciousness. So that is required. But I ask, what are you learning also? What principles are you learning? Silence. So you need both. So usually I notice that devotees don't give themselves enough time to really understand what it is they're a part of. Usually, especially in our classes, and especially in ISKCON, we always harping on the fact that you need a guru so much, which is a true point. And it's a point to be harped on, because Prabhupada harps on it himself. And then what happens is people come and they feel that pressure, you know. And usually when in a society of devotees, when you meet someone new, the first question they'll ask you, sometimes even before your name, is who's your guru, you know. Maybe they ask your name first. Haribol Prabhu, what's your name? So-and-so, who's your guru? Yeah, and that's usually the second and third question that comes up, who's your guru? So everyone feels this, and then you say, well, I don't have a guru. Oh, you need a guru. Otherwise, you will not be successful in spiritual life. That is true. Everyone needs a guru, but when to get guru? That is the question also. Well, you say the sooner the better, but what will be the basis of your selection of guru if you have no education in Krishna consciousness? Then the basis will have to be necessarily whimsical, based on your own experience in the material world, which has nothing to do with spiritual, you know, comprehension and so on. And this way, if devotees give themselves enough time to kind of develop, I've seen this happen a lot, where someone takes initiation, you know, they find a guru really fast within the first few months, they take initiation, and then after staying and moving for some time and developing their knowledge base and their own kind of personality, they find that it's very much different from the person they took shelter of kind of prematurely. And then that creates this sankat situation where, my Krishna consciousness personality actually really resonates here. But now you've accepted as guru, so guru gives an instruction, don't go over there. Then sankat, finished. Immediately finished. You know, spiritual life will be over, you know. Then you will go and some apara will be committed, and that creates obstacle. Suppose you find that one Shiksha Guru is actually more advanced than Diksha Guru. So you go to that Shiksha Guru and you kind of disregard. That's apara. You will not make advancement in spiritual life. Even though that Guru is more neophyte. Because you accepted as Guru and now you more or less rejecting by negligence. That commits apara. Then you make... So devotees can kind of avoid some of these complications if they give themselves a little bit more time. You know, even a decade or so, why not? I mean, of course, you say, well, what if you die? You know, it's not like if I get initiation, I die the next day, I'm going back home, back to Godhead, you know. The process of Krishna consciousness usually is a multi-life process. Although you can go back home to Godhead in one life, as Prabhupada said, all that means is you can go back home to Godhead in one life. It doesn't mean you will go back home back to Godhead in one life. So giving oneself enough time to get actually educated in Krishna consciousness, what is the world of thought that I'm getting involved with? And try to resolve some of these dilemmas before you actually take shelter of a guru. That is wise. Otherwise, these sankats come up. And then after, if you have done such thoughtfulness before and you find this dilemma, you have to just talk it out. There is no, you know, you present it to the spiritual authorities. This is true for services in Krishna consciousness also. It's just like a general principle. Then you just speak it out. I'm having inspiration like this. Now I'm getting inspiration. Now I want to go take guidance there. What is it? What is the problem? There is no envy amongst the community of Vaishnavas. And the gurus are one in that they have one interest to see to the elevation of the individual. And then if it comes to a problem because of differences amongst gurus and so on, that's a whole other set of complications, you know. Not really to be discussed here. But generally there should be no problem. There is no envy amongst Vaishnavas. So when you say, I'm inspired here now. Great. Haribo. The blessings you can win.
Something about their service.
No, I said the same thing applies to the services as well. That's what I said. It's a general principle. Yeah.
When he matures and he gets a particular personality and he sees that this personality, my personality doesn't match with the instruction of my spiritual master. Or he's inspired by some other Siksha Guru. But the development of that personality, does not it depend upon the spiritual master? Whatever he's learning, but because of the mercy of this guru, he's doing.
Well, I'm using the word personality in a very material sense here. Not like our spiritual personalities in terms of one of the four rasas. Not that personality. I'm talking about just what resonates with our psychology in Krishna consciousness. There may be several pure devotees who are speaking, but that does not mean that everyone's speech is going to resonate with the type of psychology you have. Therefore, this is one reason why the guru tattva is multifaceted. Because the conditioned souls are in multifaceted conditions, forms of conditioning. And therefore, in order to resonate with their psychology, Krishna will appear accordingly for those sincere individuals who are sincere but conditioned. So this is one reason why the Guru Tattva is multifaceted, because it's addressing all types of conditioned souls and attracting them back to the lotus feet of Krishna. Understand? Guru Tattva, of course, is one, but he appears in multifaceted forms. And therefore, when I use the word personality, I kind of mean it strictly in terms of the antakarana, the inner body, our psychology and so on. So what resonates with, like for example, you find some persons who resonate very well with very strong sort of discussions. You know, just like real heavy and just, and pure devotional presentation, but very like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. You know, you hear Srila Bhakti, some people just really feel like fired up when you hear Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, isn't it? I know I have that experience. The way he speaks, so heavy, cutting every point. Now, and some people when they hear that, devotees, I'm using devotees, when they hear that, they feel discouraged and wiped out. And I don't know about this Krishna consciousness. It's too heavy. Then some other persons, they hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like very like all accommodating spirit, you know, just like everyone is good, just, you know. Of course, preaching the same principles of Shuddha Bhakti, but this move was gentler, a little gentler. And so some people resonate more, but other devotees are like, this is too gentle for me. I need a little bit more. Now, their understanding is not a spiritual one. Their attraction to Shuddha Bhakti Siddhanta over, let's say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur or vice versa is not based on exactly spiritual considerations, but it's based on what's resonating with their psychology at the present moment of their development. So they are sincere persons, but they identify with their, just like I would imagine that most of the people in this room are sincere, but they're conditioned. We're all conditioned. So then we have different things that resonate with our psychology in terms of the presentation of Krishna consciousness. And so when I use the word personality, I use it more strictly in that sense, not in terms of the development of our spiritual personality and in terms of one of the four rasas, but just in terms of our psychology.
Right. It makes things clear, but the thing is that just linking this question to this other question that does the external psychological features of a devotee or disciple, it goes parallel with the internal development?
No, not necessarily. But it will play a role in terms of the selection of guru, for sure. Just like some people choose guru, they like gurus who are very philosophical, like extremely philosophical, going into a lot of technicalities and so on. And so they have a psychology that really resonates with that. Whereas some like true spiritual masters, they tell a lot of pastimes and stories, and they kind of resonate more with that sort of. So that our psychological disposition does play a role in our selection. It should not be the major role. The major role should be understanding of shastra. That should be, but unfortunately, because that education is usually lacking, then our psychological disposition usually takes the main front stage in terms of our selection. That leads to later problems, of course, because of uncontrolled mind. You start rejecting the guru and so on. But we cannot say that it doesn't play a role, because we are conditioned souls. So it's right up there in the front of our various predilections and considerations. Any other questions? Yes, Rule. I was going to go to the next verse, but I think I'll finish 8:15. The microphone might not be on.
And Arjuna accepted Krishna as the spiritual master.
Yes.
Was that considered the initiation of?
No, he was receiving shiksha from Krishna.
So he got initiated by a guru with his past, like he was already.
I'm not exactly sure. I know in the case of Yudhishthira Maharaj, his guru was, I think his name was Kripacharya. This mentioned in the 12th chapter of the first canto. So I kind of assume that most of them, the Pandavas, maybe not from Kripacharya, but they had a guru. Krishna was their shiksha guru. He was giving shiksha as a friend. That wasn't initiation as such. Was there a second question?
Well, I was going to say, let's say you meet your, do we only have one, throughout our lives, it's the same Diksha guru that initiates us usually? Is that how it is?
What do you mean? When we take different births?
Yeah, when we take different births, is it usually the same guru that initiates us?
No, not necessarily. Okay. Sometimes it is said that unless the spirit, the Diksha guru delivers all his disciples, then he can't go back home back to Godhead. That means that no Diksha Guru is ever going back home back to Godhead. Especially if the Diksha Gurus are taking thousands of disciples. There's no way all of them are going back home back to Godhead in that one life. I mean, just think of Srila Prabhupada and how many disciples he had and how many disciples that we know of that didn't make it back home back to Godhead in this life. Does that mean Srila Prabhupada is somewhere stuck in the material world, trying to liberate the conditions? Perhaps. But I think most of us think Prabhupada went back home back to Godhead, isn't it? I don't think many of us think otherwise. Of course, by the desire of the spiritual master, he can stay in the material world and do such services. But it is not that that is the case, that unless all the disciples are delivered, the Diksha Guru cannot go back home back to Godhead. That like we were saying, Jame Jame, Prabhu say, birth after birth, Guru is coming, because Guru is Krishna. And Krishna is manifesting in multifarious forms. So although it could be the case that the same Jiva is again coming to deliver the disciple, but it's not necessarily the case. Krishna is coming in the form of guru. He may take on different form, maybe different jiva also, who will do that service of delivering the disciple to the lotus feet of Krishna. So guru tattva, of course, is an unlimitedly subtle and complex tattva to understand. I've mentioned this before, that there are certain tattvas in Krishna consciousness that are a little bit tricky to understand because of their closeness to material nature. Guru tattva is one of them. Shiva tattva is another. He's not exactly spiritual, he's not material either. He's not fully spiritual material. Dham is another one that's really hard to understand, especially when you go to the Dham. Another one is Didi. These are tattvas that are fully spiritual, but their resemblance to material aspects of the material nature is so uncanny, it makes it very hard to understand their actual position. And so guru tattva is certainly one such topic that is very subtle and complex to understand. But as a simple principle, it is not necessarily the case that the same jiva comes to deliver the disciple. Nor is it necessarily the case that the Diksha Guru played the prominent role in the delivery of the disciple. Because ultimately, the way that Gaudiya Vaishnavas define Diksha This is a definition given by starting with Jiva Goswami all the way down through the list. Prabhupada quotes it in NOI Text 5 as well, that the diksha means the communication of transcendental knowledge and the removal of anarthas. This is how diksha is described by Jiva Goswami and then through our Guru Parampara. So in other words, diksha guru is a shiksha guru first. It is because of the shiksha that you've been attracted to take diksha, isn't it? That is his shiksha first you heard that attracted you to his lotus feet to take diksha. So diksha guru is a shiksha guru first. So it's the shiksha that really does delivery, right? The communication of the transcendental knowledge when applied delivers you to the lotus feet of Krishna. So that shiksha may be coming from a diksha guru, that shiksha may be coming from another manifestation of guru tattva that is not your diksha guru. So that's when things can get complicated, it can get into the sankat situation. Especially because oftentimes we hear that the diksha guru is like the main. And generally when we say guru in ISKCON, it means the diksha guru. Generally, when you say guru, it means diksha guru. And that creates a lot of complications actually in the application of the principle of guru tattva, because it is not the case that the diksha guru will always play the prominent role in a disciple's life, for obvious reasons. One reason being you don't see him, and another reason being how you're connecting with the shiksha. Okay, anything else? Any other questions, comments, concerns? I did really good today. I finished at 7:57. Now it's 8:21. So if there aren't any more questions.
The external thing and internal thing doesn't match because of the conditioned nature. Because of a conditioned nature, it doesn't match.
Yes.
So doesn't it, it's like anartha nivritti stage, that externally we are behaving some way. We are in the stage of anartha nivritti, where all the anarthas are there. We are struggling with our conditioning nature. And so after that, the good things will stay and the bad thing goes away. And the same psychology continue with the internal, matching with internal thing. Are you getting my...
No, I'm not.
Okay.
The simple example of the internal and external not matching and the sages of Dandakaranya forest. They were all sages. When they saw Lord Ramchandra, they had conjugal feelings towards Lord Ramchandra. And then Ramchandra said, don't worry, you'll take birth in Krishna Leela and you can associate with Krishna in the amorous position. So although they had male forms, so then Rupa Goswami comments, although they had male forms, their mood of devotion was as a gopi. So this is an example where the external and the internal aren't matching. So it's not necessary that the two will match. It's not that because I'm in a woman's body, then I'm more fit for the cultivation of gopi bhav. Or because I'm in a man's body, I'm more fit for the cultivation of sakya bhav. So those sorts of things have nothing to do with psychological. That's just spiritual advancement, development of spiritual life, low yam, whatever you're attracted to, etc. Like that. It has nothing to do with our conditioned psychology. Anything else? Okay. Anything over here? Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you can Mukunda Dad, or you can. Oh, no. Yes.
My question was, supposing, like how you were saying, the psychology doesn't match for a disciple with his guru. My question is, would that be a basis of rejection for the guru, or should they just continue even if the psychology...
Well, if you've accepted a personality as guru, that's like marriage, you know. So you kind of stuck. I mean, it's not that you're stuck. That's a kind of a negative connotation. But I guess the point that I was making is that we should give ourselves time to make that decision. And in case when many of us have not actually given ourselves sufficient time, sometimes you've been around 7-8 years and that's still not sufficient time. It's a fact, you know. But we're always like in anxiety. If I don't get immediately, then I might die and not go back home back to Godhead. You might get and die and not go back home back to Godhead, you know. So in the case where we have not given ourselves enough time and we have made such a decision, then that's something you might have to actually just speak about with your guru. that my psychology is such and such. I'm resonating like in this way and these sorts of topics, and the personalities really resonate with the type of conditioning that I have. And like I said, that can't be the only role. The main factor should be spiritual education for which we're making any decisions in life. Knowledge should always be the basis of action. In fact, that it is. Knowledge or the lack thereof is usually always the basis of some type of action. So, but although knowledge should play the key role, it is not that our psychology doesn't play any role whatsoever. That's impossible because we do identify with the subtle body very strongly, more strongly than the gross body. And so to give up that subtle identification is nearly impossible. It is impossible if you're not spiritually advanced. And therefore, we have to accept that it does play a role in the decision makings that we do make. And therefore, if one has made such a decision of accepting a guru and then later on discovers something that's not really resonating, that's just something you're going to have to speak out with your spiritual master. And like I said, it doesn't constitute a fault if you go to the guru and say, this is the situation and now I'm finding myself. That is, in a lot of ways, that is very natural. Like I gave the example of Gopal Kumar, where he's shifting grounds constantly, finding inspiration here. You know, his Diksha Guru is there. His Diksha Guru gives him the mantra, and then his Diksha Guru is gone. Like, that he doesn't educate him more in the actual mantra and so on. And so he's mostly getting his nourishment in spiritual life from Shiksha Gurus. And he finds himself constantly shifting grounds until he makes it all the way up to Braja, where he feels totally satisfied. And that way, we might find ourselves in a similar situation. Of course, that usually takes a lot more spiritual maturity. Therefore, generally, the encouragement is to wait until some of these things really start to come out a little bit. I have knowledge base now. I'm starting to realize what my psychology really resonates with and so on. And if I've already made a decision somewhat prematurely, then this is something you should have to speak out with your spiritual master for clarifying purposes and so on. I see no other way that, on a personal level, I see no other way that you can reconcile the situation. I've personally gone to my spiritual master and mentioned of certain things where I had doubts about him and so on, and that I'm resonating this sort of way. And he's always given me encouragement overall. And wherever there was needed for it to be some pull the reins in, he's pulled the reins in. He's explained to me in great detail why that was the case. So then all I can say is that conversation really helps. I think many of us sometimes when we hear about Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I'm going to jump in the Ganga if I don't have you as my guru. We have this really romantic idea of the guru-disciple relationship because we always hear about it in terms of romance, isn't it? And we all want romance, isn't it? Everyone wants romance, the boy-girl type romance. We like that. The notion of it is nice. As conditioned souls, we appreciate. And also when we hear these very romantic depictions of Krishna consciousness, you know, Queen Kunti just pray for calamities every day. And it's like, it's very romantic. Arjuna decided to fight the war. Just whatever, Krishna, whatever you want, I'll just do it. But when it comes to practical life, spiritual life is hardly romantic. It's for the strong-hearted. And a lot of times in terms of the guru-disciple relationship, it's going to take a lot of conversation and so on. And that also, and other factors come into play also in terms of the spiritual development of the guru and the disciple. I mean, there are a lot of factors that come into it that creates a lot of challenges for our faith and so on. So conversation is, at least it's a good starting point. What else can we do? If you reject guru like that by being negligent, you may say, I don't reject my guru, but you're negligent, that is an offense. That will create great, great obstacles in the development. So if one is accepted, you have to kind of deal. Yes.
Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances. Thank you so much for the class. Referring to your point on the different perspectives and, you know, third person perspective, having more clarity on a dilemma, whereas a first person, you know, you get confusion. I'm wondering if you could speak on how we as devotees may support other devotees when we're in the third person perspective and maybe have more of a clear standpoint on what's going on? Or is it just the case that the person in the dilemma should seek out spiritual master? And
well, it's both. Not just a spiritual master, but a friend. First of all, if we are the third person party wanting to offer advice, we ourselves should have some level of spiritual steadiness. Otherwise, what advice you will give? You know, just like sometimes, like materialists, when they have troubles, they go to their friends, and their friends give them very good advice. Let's go out and drink. And that's like their, so if you have no knowledge base, what will be the basis of your getting any guidance? So I think it's natural if we call ourselves friends of someone, and we are in a third-party position, and we see that a friend is struggling, it is only natural that you will try to give some perspective. Because you do have, especially if you have the knowledge base, and you have the detachment because you're not part of that situation, then that could be a welcomed advice for the person who you're calling your friend. Sometimes, in a third-party position, having done that, it may not be accepted so easily. They may consider, usually because when you're detached, you can say really detached things also, right? So that becomes somewhat problematic. Just like when you're detached, you say just abandon it, that is all nonsense. You know, you say something very detached, and the person who's very attached cannot digest that. So sometimes they may not be able to hear what a third-party person is saying, and they have doubts about your intentions and so on. At that time, you might have to just remain silent. Krishna has done such a thing. Arjuna, he offers as a friend. He's Arjuna's friend. He's offering some third-party advice. He has the knowledge base because he's God. He knows everything. So he's no problem there. And then he offers some advice to Arjuna. And how does Arjuna take it? No, Krishna, you're not understanding. Let me explain to you again. There's Bhishma, there's Drona. He goes through this whole, you know. So then Krishna has to be silent. He keeps quiet because he's not able to hear anything. Because he's too attached. In other words, in order to hear, you have to be a little detached from your situation. There has to be at least a willingness to let go. Otherwise, you will not hear anything. You're not hear anything unless there's a little strength in you to let go of something. You're not hear anything. So Krishna realized he's not going to hear anything, so he kept silent. Then what happened? Arjuna got totally bewildered because that's the nature of a Dharma Sankat. You get bewildered. And then when the bewilderment becomes very acute, you can't act anymore. At that time, he sought Krishna's help, so he was able to hear. So sometimes, as a friend, you may naturally say something, because that's what friends will do. We have that liberty with each other. But then sometimes, if you see they're not able to digest it, you might have to keep quiet. At that time, they would have to actually seek your help or seek the help of some superior. Otherwise, they'll not be able to get out of the situation. So relationships don't really operate according to rules. Relationships are spontaneous by nature. You can't legislate relationships. It's impossible. You try and it gets ugly. Just like you can say these are the rules in which you should engage with the guru and so on. But ultimately, the relationship has a very spontaneous nature to it, you know. The guru spontaneously has to say something. The disciple is doing something. So you can't really legislate relationships. You can only get an understanding of general principles by which a relationship may be successful. But a lot of it is a give and take sort of thing. And so you cannot say, in all cases, it should be like this if you're a third party. In all cases, it should be like this if you're a first party. A lot of it is going to be planted by ear. All right, so thank you very much for your enthusiastic participation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ooh, flowers are all...
Okay. Bro, we should be meeting downstairs.
His psychology would definitely play a role in his interpretation. I'm saying it's not that the psychological situation is exactly matched. The inner personality seems to cultivate. Therefore, the necessity to hear the pastime of Krishna with the devotees and whose psychology seems to evolve. Thank you.
Krishna.